listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to PTCE's Pharmacy Connect, a podcast focused on continuing education created by pharmacists for pharmacists. PTCE is the leader in pharmacy and managed care education. In these episodes, listeners will be presented with the most recent clinical updates and strategies for implementing into practice. And now, here's our host and founder of the Pharmacy Podcast Network, Todd Urey.
Hey, I'd like to introduce our moderator for today's podcast, Dr. Mary Barna Bridgman, who is a clinical professor at the Ernest Mario School of Pharmacy at Rutgers, the State University of New Jersey, in Piscataway, New Jersey, an internal medicine pharmacist at Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital in New Brunswick. Dr. Bridgman will lead an incredible discussion on acne and the role of OTC skin products in helping maintain the skin barrier. This has become a very important and popular topic to be discussed among pharmacists, and we see throughout social media, as well as throughout many chat boards, how pharmacists are becoming leaders within skin care. And with that, I'm turning it over to Dr. Mary Bridgman.
Thank you, Todd. I'm thrilled to be here. I wanted to share just a little bit of background before we begin. I've been a pharmacist now for almost 20 years. I spent about a decade of my life in community practice, and I currently work in the hospital practice setting. I believe as pharmacists, we play a crucial role in advocating for safe and effective medication use across the care settings that we may work and practice in. Throughout my career, and maybe throughout my life, I've always been intrigued by non-prescription medicines and really passionate about educating patients how to optimize self-care and self-management of conditions like acne, where oftentimes a patient may try and self-medicate before even seeking medical advice. This is an important topic since acne, or acne vulgaris, is an inflammatory skin disease recognized, in fact, as the most common skin condition in the United States. It's estimated to affect up to 50 million Americans. It's interesting for me to reflect on the term vulgaris in the context of acne vulgaris. Vulgaris comes from the Latin word meaning common or affecting the masses, and that's truly what a condition like acne really represents. Thank you so much to our audience for joining us today to discuss acne and how it affects the community of individuals living with this common skin condition, and to discuss strategies to individualize patient care with the help of over-the-counter skincare products. I'm joined today by Robin Laird, who will be sharing her perspective as a patient. Robin, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your skincare challenges related to acne?
So my name is Robin, and I have struggled with acne, I think, on and off throughout my 20s. But I was also someone who did not have acne as a teenager. So it's really something that crept up on me. And it's also been in combination with rosacea. So it's been really interesting to look back on, you know, my entire 20s. I'm now 31, and see how acne and rosacea increasingly crept up on me, and I became more and more aware of it until the point that I recognized that I had these conditions, but there was a period where I didn't quite recognize it. So today I think my skin is so much better, and a lot of that journey has been with over-the-counter medications, and I'm really excited to share about that today. I know my sister actually had a similar experience. She did not have acne really as a teenager, but more so later in early adulthood. So I think this is something that's really prevalent, and I'm excited to hear your thoughts as a professional.
Robin, I'm so appreciative for you sharing your experience and sort of your willingness to talk about your journey as it relates to skincare. I think, you know, we've got a lot of lessons to learn from your experience, really, as a patient living with acne as well. To provide everyone with just some background on acne and acne management as we begin our discussion, although acne can occur at any age or at any stage of life, acne is really most common during adolescence and usually begins during puberty. Approximately 85% of people between the ages of 12 and 24 experience at least minor acne, with, you know, peak acne prevalence really occurring around the ages of 14 to 17 years for girls and around the age of 16 to 19 years in boys. I want to point out that while there is no mortality associated with acne, there is often a significant physical and psychological burden associated with this condition. Permanent scarring, a poor self-image, depression, and even anxiety have been attributed to those experiencing acne symptoms. And, you know, when we reflect on the cost, now total cost associated with treatment for acne and with lost productivity for those seeking medical care for acne, it's estimated in the billions of dollars. And in fact, in excess of $3 billion in the U.S. each year are dedicated to these health-related expenses. I'll talk just a little bit about the pathophysiology of acne. And when we think about it, acne is a multifactorial inflammatory disorder of the pilosebaceous glands. And really, this is a condition that results in lesions that tend to be most commonly found on the face, but that can also present on the chest, on the upper and lower back, on one's shoulders, arms, and neck. Our understanding of the pathophysiology of acne really does continue to evolve, but we know that there are some key pathogenic factors that are thought to play an important role in acne development. And really, when I reflect on those factors, those include things like follicular hyperkeratinization, an abnormal turnover of skin cells, microbial colonization. There's been an organism that's undergone a name change, but Cutibacterium acnes, or C. acnes, has been thought to colonize certain individuals affected by acne. There may be an increase in sebum production, certainly inflammatory mechanisms, and a multitude of other potential factors, including certain neuroendocrine mechanisms, the influence of our diet, which I think we could certainly talk a lot about. Also genetic and even non-genetic factors are thought to play a role. We know that acne, in essence, is really a manifestation or characterized by skin barrier dysfunction that can be present. And I do want to just spend a moment and point out that it's a common myth or misperception that acne is just quote unquote oily skin and that the focus of treatment in acne is to dry up that excessive oil. I know maybe some of us have encountered that in our practice or that perception. I certainly hope that we can combat this myth in particular in our discussion today and hopefully reiterate the importance of skin moisturization and good skin care as a mechanism for managing acne. Robin, I know that the topic of acne and skincare is certainly important to you personally. Can you tell our audience a little bit about that, about your sort of struggle with skincare and a little bit more about the importance of skincare to you and your sister?
Yeah, sure. So it's interesting to hear you mention, you know, some of the causes of acne. I definitely think in my own personal experience, I've noticed it was related to periods of inflammation in my life, especially related to periods where I had digestive issues. And I think that really showed up on my skin as acne and rosacea. Maybe perhaps interesting to note is I do have oily skin, but it's not really periods that my skin was oily that I was most breaking out. In fact, there were periods where I tried a lot of over-the-counter things, and I think I actually was too aggressive with my skincare that actually caused even more acne to form. So to your previous point about oily skin, for me, my periods of acne don't seem to have anything to do with the oiliness of my skin, but rather the level of inflammation in my body and the quality of my skin barrier. And so now I really am practicing not overstripping the skin, being very kind to the skin, being aware that there are microbes living on my skin that help the health of it and help avoid acne. I think in my experience of diagnosing that I had acne, as I mentioned before, it kind of crept up on me over time. And I started to seek professional help in different ways, go to get facials. And I remember it really hit me that I really am struggling with acne when the facialist said, do you want the special acne treatment? If you sign up with your insurance, this is even covered by insurance. And just that moment of realizing, hey, I actually have a medical skin condition here, was quite impactful. And that did make me take skincare a lot more seriously. I've tried so many different things, so many different ingredients. Definitely spent a lot of my own personal money on over-the-counter skincare. But it, in many ways, it's been so worth it to me, because acne is not only kind of visually disheartening, but it can be very painful. And the type of acne, especially in my most inflamed moments, is really deep cystic acne. And that's just painful. So it feels so good today to kind of be on the other end of that. And I hope to share anything that can help you guys understands the patient perspective of someone with cystic acne, because it's definitely burdensome in many ways. But I really have a new appreciation for skincare and the impact that topical treatments can have on treating this very impactful condition for patients.
Robin, thank you so much. You know, I think your challenges, you know, the pain you describe and even the financial expense of pursuing these different treatments, I think it really exemplifies, you're really kind of personifying for pharmacists, you know, the experience of living with acne that we often don't have the opportunity to hear how this condition or how other conditions like acne affect the patients that we serve. So I very much appreciate you sharing these experiences and how multifaceted, a condition like acne has so many implications on various elements and aspects of our lives. Before we jump into discussion about acne treatments, I do want to underscore that in a majority of cases, acne tends to be a self-limiting condition. And, you know, our treatment options can help to control this condition to a variable degree. I do want to mention that adherence to a therapeutic regimen may help to reduce scarring and frequency and severity of exacerbations. So anything we can do to advocate and to help patients to be compliant or adherent with a skincare regimen is important. Because acne may be persistent over time, treatment considerations should be long-term. They should be continuous and consistent. So as a mechanism for promoting adherence, I think consistency is a key counseling point or element to share about skincare regimens. And while it may not be feasible to attain lesion elimination, at least decreasing the number and severity of lesions and preventing future lesions or recurrence, scarring, and reducing the risk of hyperpigmentation really represent important goals of treatment for most individuals living with acne. Robin, what you shared seems to be fairly common for individuals living with acne. Can you talk a little bit about your treatment goals and how you've approached managing your condition in that context of what your goals have been?
Yeah, sure. So I think originally my goals were really to first and foremost reduce and eliminate the cystic acne that I was experiencing. Secondary was also the rosacea that seemed to be flaring up along with it. And both of those things have really improved for me over the years. I may still get a few pimples here or there time to time, but in general, my skin is much happier, and there's been many things I've done to kind of get to this point. But now I still have treatment goals, but those goals are more revolving around maintaining the quality of my skin barrier and protecting my skin. So the products that I use today are very gentle, supporting the skin barrier and also making sure I'm always wearing SPF. So now my treatment goals are really about protecting the integrity of my skin. I think some of the issues with testing all of these different over-the-counter products is that it is possible to compromise your skin barrier and irritate it through too many aggressive things or too many different products at once. And I've definitely experienced that. Many years ago, I used too many aggressive products and kind of the pendulum swung to me almost my acne not necessarily being caused by internal inflammation, but just a compromised skin barrier. And so I have definitely tried many different over-the-counter products over the years, probably in the hundreds. And it feels really good now to feel like I'm on the other end of this journey. But it was a lot of trial and error. So anything I can share to kind of help another person listening would be great.
Robin, thank you so much. You know, it seems to me like there are so many different and varied over-the-counter products that are indicated for skincare, and that, you know, as you pointed out, trying hundreds of products potentially, you know, it seems like this can be somewhat overwhelming as far as an experience as a patient. Can you talk a little bit about your process of identifying and trialing products and what that might have looked like?
Yeah, so in the early days, I really think that it was just hearing through the grapevine or even on the internet which products were popular. So Google and Reddit, these places were really where I got kind of first inspirations. But now that I've gotten older and I'm a lot more experienced, I have a better understanding of what specific ingredients I may be looking for. And I've also become a little bit more systematic in testing my skincare. So now when I introduce a new product, I do A/B testing on my face, where I'll only try it on half of my face for a few days to see what it's doing for me, what it's not doing for me. And so today I feel more confident in my understanding of skincare ingredients and navigating that landscape and not necessarily falling for just marketing headlines, but really looking at the ingredients, as well as being systematic in testing things in a very rigorous manner and only introducing one new product at a time.
Great. Really important points there, Robin. And, you know, I certainly hope you have a medical team, a healthcare team, and a pharmacist also who might be a reputable source or a useful source of information or question.
Yes. In the early days, I did not, but now I do have a online dermatologist.
Fantastic. Well, you know, again, I'll just sort of reflect a little bit about how an individualized approach is really essential for management of skin conditions such as acne. Multiple acne treatments are available, both over the counter and by prescription. The American Academy of Dermatology, or the AAD, has in fact released updated acne treatment guidelines for 2024. And in this year's guidelines, strong recommendations are made for the use of benzoyl peroxide, topical retinoids, topical antibiotics, and use of oral doxycycline. Topical retinoids include tretinoin, adapalene, tazarotene, and triferatine. Adapalene, we know, is available over the counter, while the others remain prescription therapies. Daily sunscreen use is especially important to reduce sunburn risks with these therapies due to the potential for photosensitivity. For severe acne that is causing a psychosocial burden or scarring, or for individuals who may be failing standard oral or topical therapies, oral isotretinoin is strongly recommended. The guidelines do provide some conditional recommendations for topical clascoterone, salicylic acid, and azelaic acid, as well as for oral minocycline, sarecycline, combined oral contraceptive pills, and spironolactone. Additionally, this year's guideline update offers some good practice statements regarding the use of combined topical therapies, regarding limiting systemic antibiotic use and exposure in the essence of being good stewards of our antibiotics, regarding combining systemic antibiotics with topical therapies, and even to inform the use of intralesional corticosteroid injections for larger acne lesions. Importantly, I want to point out that the guidelines provide guidance on management of acne during pregnancy, and that includes the discussion of the potential use of topical therapies other than topical or systemic retinoids during this time. Pharmacists and pharmacy technicians should be familiar with the REMS program for isotretinoin for any patients that have the potential to become pregnant, since this therapy is contraindicated in pregnancy due to the risk of fetal harm. It is important to educate patients that for those seeking over-the-counter options, adapalene is not recommended in pregnancy. And with topical azelaic acid, clindamycin, benzoyl peroxide, and erythromycin, again, topical preparations, there is limited systemic absorption and the risk of fetal harm is not expected. But of course, patients that are pregnant should review acne treatment with their providers. Many of the ingredients in our topical acne medicines are known to cause skin irritation and dryness. And these potential adverse effects may further compromise skin barrier function during treatment. Patients may try over-the-counter use of products like benzoyl peroxide, salicylic acid, and adapalene, for instance. And we know that benzoyl peroxide and adapalene may, in particular, cause dryness or a burning sensation to the skin. It's the adverse effects of common acne treatments that can further compromise skin barrier function. And it has been reported that there are rates of adherence as low as 45% for some topical acne treatments. If we do come back and revisit the oily skin myth related to the cause and goals of treatment for someone with acne, this is likely a reason why a lot of patients don't use moisturizers with acne because of this fear that moisturization may in fact exacerbate the condition. Personal experience and conditions can certainly change our perspectives. And Robin, I'm wondering if we can hear more about your acne and skincare treatment journey, and especially the role of some of the over-the-counter medications or moisturizers, sunscreens that have perhaps been a part of your regimen. What's been your experience like in trying over-the-counter and prescription medicines?
Sure. I'm happy to share a little bit more about the specific ingredients and products that I've been using over the years. During my teenage years, when I had the occasional pimple, I found benzoyl peroxide to be very helpful in managing that. But as I got older and in my 20s and started to get kind of more chronic cystic inflamed acne, it really seemed like something that was, well, now I know, something that was also coming from within. And so I really had to work on treating that topically, but also internally through proper digestive health care. During this cystic acne period, I experimented a lot with many different types of active ingredients. I have found that vitamin A forms of ingredients seem to be very beneficial to my skin, but when I was playing around with over-the-counter medications and topical treatments, I do think that there were periods that I overdid this, especially using ingredients like retinol in too high a degree. Whereas today I have a prescription through a dermatologist for low-dose tretinoin, and this has been the best thing for my skin in terms of an active that has helped my acne and just managed both the rosacea and the acne together. Before this prescription for my rosacea, I also tried many things, including azelaic acid, which also did not seem to go that well. It seemed like it was burning my skin a little bit. And again, with over-the-counter, it's not always clear, I've noticed. A good product should say exact percentages, but it's not always the case that you get that with over-the-counter products. So that's something I now try to pay attention to, exactly what percentages of ingredients are in my products that I'm trying. I've also found through experimenting that vitamin C is something that really sensitizes my skin, and I'm able to use a very light vitamin C derivative product, but nothing with just pure ascorbic acid, because that really seems to break me out further and again compromise that delicate skin barrier for whatever reason. And to your point about the oiliness of my skin does not seem to relate too much to whether I'm experiencing acne. And in fact, sometimes in periods where my skin has been quite oily, my skin barrier was still very healthy and I had less acne. So moisturizer and sunscreen and these kind of thicker occlusive things are really certainly a part of my routine because it supports my skin barrier. So if I were to kind of give a general walkthrough of my skincare now, I really focus in the beginning on light serums that contain really nourishing ingredients like peptides and ceramides. And then I may go in with something active like a low dose tretinoin. And then I will finish that off with just a very simple moisturizer to lock that in. And then every single day, also an SPF. And so that's a very, very simple routine, but that's what I do every single morning. And it works well for me now. In the evening, I will also use a cleansing balm and a cleanser, also going for fragrance-free and gentle products. And it's less complicated than it used to be, but my skin is a lot happier.
Robin, I want to talk a little bit more about some of the product and some of the product ingredients that you had recommended or you had described in your description of your skincare regimen. I do think pharmacists should understand the use of over-the-counter moisturizers as really an adjunctive treatment for acne management. When I think about over-the-counter moisturization use, we know that dry skin and skin irritation resulting from our topical acne treatments can be common reasons for acne medication non-adherence. We also know that skin barrier dysfunction, as you've mentioned through your experience, can actually contribute to acne, and that ceramide-containing moisturizers may in fact enhance medication adherence and may complement existing acne therapies. I'll come back to that in a moment as well. I think that patients treated for acne should consider adjunctive moisturization or moisturizer therapy to help prevent skin barrier dysfunction. And I'll just talk a little bit about some of those ceramide-containing moisturizers that could be considered in patients who are receiving other treatments for acne as well. If we ask the question, you know, what are ceramides? We know that the epidermal barrier defects in our skin really can play a critical role in the pathogenesis of acne. And ceramides are fatty acids that are naturally found in the epidermal skin cells and that play a crucial role in the structure of our skin, specifically in the stratum corneum or the outermost layer of our epidermis. Phytosphingosine, which is a naturally occurring ceramide, for example, plays a key role in the permeability barrier function and in our skin's antimicrobial defenses. Phytosphingosine is depleted in acne-affected skin, and that contributes to impaired skin barrier, inflammation, infection, and even diminished water barrier function in our skin. So we have these ceramides that can exist naturally in our skin structure, but we also have ceramides that are manufactured synthetically and are found in our skincare products. We know that ceramide-containing skin moisturization products play three critical functions, and that includes by maintaining and restoring our skin barrier homeostasis, by improving hydration and locking in moisture, which maybe can help with reducing signs of aging, and by helping with inflammatory skin conditions like acne, where we know acne-prone skin may be more susceptible to heightened transepidermal water losses compared with healthy skin, and that could be a function of diminished ceramide levels. As some general parameters around skin moisturizers, we know moisturizers in general, and especially for individuals who have acne, they should be non-comedogenic, they should be non-irritating and fragrance-free. These products, Robin, as you pointed out, really tend to work best when they're applied twice daily as either the final step in a nighttime skincare routine or just before sunscreen application during the day. And we know that moisturizers containing ceramides may improve the skin condition and may improve treatment adherence with other acne medicines. I do think it's important to keep in mind when interpreting and evaluating a skincare product's label that ceramide products or ceramide ingredients may be listed on the label as ceramide, ceramide 1, ceramide 2, 3, 6, but also may be listed on that label according to other names. Sometimes our ceramide names may be abbreviated like ceramide EOS or ceramide EOP, ceramide NG, ceramide NP. And even chemical names that might not be easy for someone to identify. I mentioned the term phytosphingosine. So phytosphingosine could be listed on the label, or sphingosine. Even ingredients such as N-sterol sphinganine or N-sterol phytosphingosine. So I think you have to really do a little bit of diligence in evaluating a label and looking for those particular ingredients. Robin, I know you have experience with ceramide-containing products. Can you talk a little bit about those products, or maybe expand on your use and experience?
Yes, I am personally a big fan of ceramide-containing products. I have and do use both light serums, again, fragrance-free, very gentle, as you mentioned. I use light serums containing ceramides, as well as thicker, more occlusive moisturizers containing ceramides. I will usually reserve those thicker moisturizers for the evening, but I've noticed these products have been really helpful in just balancing out the redness in my skin, making my skin less sensitive and sensitized. And I think, again, this all circles back to a healthier skin barrier. So I'm a big fan of ceramides. I typically am reading the ingredients to products. If a product mentions that it contains ceramides, I'll see where it falls on the ingredient list. And I think, to your point, it's also helpful to be able to turn to a pharmacist who can maybe walk through some of the products on a label with you and make sure you're choosing a product that is going to be effective and non-irritating.
Great advice. Great thoughts, Robin. And I'm wondering if you can expand on that final mention about, you know, walking through a product ingredient list with a pharmacist, and maybe share a little bit more about your thoughts about how might pharmacists and providers better support individuals living with acne, such as yourself.
I think where skincare becomes very overwhelming is when there's a lack of transparency and a lack of understanding. And I think one place where pharmacists can really help a patient feel better emotionally and more in control is to patiently maybe go through an ingredient list, explain a few ingredients, what they are. For kind of a lay person, there's a lot of complicated names sometimes, and that can feel scary or overwhelming. I think a pharmacist can really help that feeling by just walking through the ingredients with a patient. And also, I now know this, but even just mentioning things like the fact that the first ingredients are going to be in larger quantities than the latter ingredients on the ingredient list. And these very simple things that just help a patient feel more in control and better able to navigate the many aisles of skincare products in a store.
These are such helpful reminders. Thank you, Robin. You know, in sort of reflecting on your remarks and thinking about my own experiences, just a few additional reminders I'd point out for pharmacists. I think even reflecting on your experience, Robin, realizing that there's not this one-size-fits-all approach for successful acne treatment. And oftentimes, it's a combination of topical treatments, of oral medicines, of lifestyle adjustments, and then possibly also referral to healthcare professionals or specialists that may be necessary. Realizing that it is important for pharmacists to educate patients on the importance of reviewing the ingredients and that ingredient list in the skincare product, that I think you very elegantly described how, you know, that can be so helpful. And then again, I think regarding managing side effects, particularly for over-the-counter and prescription acne medicines, pharmacists can share guidance strategies and pearls for troubleshooting and managing those bothersome side effects, especially skin drying or peeling, and assisting with appropriate moisturization, moisturizer selection. And of course, ensuring safe and effective treatment options are utilized. You know, just as an example, assisting in ensuring safety of a patient's treatment regimen by engaging in REMS monitoring for certain products, assessing birth control, and providing other considerations accordingly. You know, just to review some general skincare fundamentals, I think cleansing is an important characteristic. in educating a patient with acne, reminding them to keep their skin clean and washing the face up to twice daily, and certainly after sweating, using those gentle alcohol-free, non-abrasive cleansers and applying those cleansers with the tips of one's fingers. And even, you know, the influence of shampooing regularly to help to really try to combat forehead acne if that's a problem. Avoiding those triggers or exacerbating factors, astringents, toners, and exfoliants can certainly dry skin and worsen the appearance of acne by damaging some of those natural protective barriers that we've spoken about today. Avoiding scrubbing with washcloths or abrasive sponges or tools that can further irritate the skin, and certainly avoiding the sun and tanning beds, using appropriate SPF and sunscreen if one's going to be in the sun for some time. Avoiding touching the face. You know, I think this is a critical method and recommendation also, not to pick or pop or squeeze acne, because that can certainly increase the risk for scarring and post-inflammatory hyperpigmentation. And then I'll also just kind of point out or include for managing acne and skin of color, emphasizing treating acne early when it's just beginning in order to prevent acne from getting worse is advised. People with skin of color have a higher risk for developing dark spots, dark patches, and keloids. So encouraging early treatment and use of appropriate treatments. You know, what that means is for mild acne in a person with skin of color, that usually encompasses topical benzoyl peroxide and a topical retinoid, as long as there aren't any contraindications to use. Robin, as we wrap up our conversation, what final thoughts would you hope healthcare professionals listening today would take away from our conversation?
Well, as you mentioned, I think everyone's experience with acne is so different, and what's going to work for everyone is so different. But I think for everyone, it's very nice to just feel heard. So creating a space, if someone comes to you with issues with acne, just a space to listen for a moment, I think is wonderful on the patient's end. But then after that, I think it's also really fun to make it a bit playful and engaging and really get into the ingredients. And at the end of the day, I think knowledge is power, and knowledge makes us feel like we have a little more autonomy, which is something that often when we have acne, we don't have. So getting really into the ingredients, I know that I have, through getting involved in ingredient lists, found things like my skin really likes zinc. So now that's something I look for in creams and sunscreens. And it's nice when it feels like a team effort. So there's listening from a pharmacist, but also education, and it's kind of a journey you're going on together. I think as weird as it is, acne is also an opportunity to get to know your body very well, to dive into these things that are so important, skincare, you know, wearing SPF, all of the things that you've mentioned, whether or not someone has acne, these are great practices to maintain over a lifetime. So I'm very almost fortunate to have maybe struggled a little bit with my skin, because now I have the utmost respect for it. I'm so conscious of what I put on it, and I'm very consistent. So acne can be something that ends in positivity. And so having someone there who's both educated and can display some empathy and time to listen and can keep things a little bit lighthearted, I think is so wonderful.
Fantastic advice, Robin. You know, I think, you know, consistency. I think I heard that come through in your remarks and in your reflection, consistency in product use. And really bringing our empathy as healthcare professionals to our patient interactions, to engage our patients and let them know how invested we are in their care. And that encompasses their whole care, their holistic care, their skin care. Thank you so much, Robin, for sharing your thoughts today on how we can improve the quality of care for patients living with acne. It has been a pleasure speaking with you and learning a little bit about your experience and your skincare routine. To our audience, thank you for listening and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks for tuning in to the PTCE Pharmacy Connect podcast. Your feedback is important to us. Please share with us your thoughts on this episode and other topics you'd like to learn about. Go to pharmacytimes.org/contact and send us a message.